right. Welcome, everybody. Pickers Market, episode 73. I can't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's moving along.
They're just flying. Well, big day, big week. Before we get into that with all the hot button Fed stuff, I think we'll start with the traditional two truths and a lie, Fed edition. Hopefully, hopefully nobody cheated.
I would not dare to. Tyler is a good example for that, though.
And it begins. Wow.
Coming in swinging today.
I tried to do it like CFA because did you sit for that recently?
May.
Okay. So PTSD is still there. So yeah, this will feel.
It does not. Right, it does not go away.
Okay. So Fed edition. So choice A. Over the full 12 months of easing cycles since 1970, over the last half century, consumer cyclical stocks have averaged a whopping 19% return, outpacing the S&P 500. Option B, since World War II, energy stocks typically see gains of 5% on average in the 12 months following interest rate cuts. And option C, every easing cycle since World War II has seen energy stocks as the ultimate laggard, averaging minus 5% returns.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'm going to go with Keith to start.
Well, might as well. A, I believe is true. The 12-month cyclicals probably, everybody says cyclicals do well when they cut. So I'm saying that's true. And the other two, so it's down to B and C, huh? I would say C is probably true just because why not? Energy could be a laggard. Someone's got to be. And then I'm going B. B is false.
That was a strong statement.
Yeah.
Lisa?
A little light on my details, but that's where I'm going with. Just kind of like test taking.
Yep. I'm not so sure about the actual return. So that could be anything, right? There could be a percent up or down, whatever. So I'm not focusing all that much on that, I guess. To Keith's point, consumer cyclical tends to rally, at least in the beginning, when we have an easing cycle. So I can see that. And energy stocks, it's one or the other, right? It's outperforming. I would say generally energy is doing not bad in an easing cycle. I don't see that as a laggard, to be honest. So I would say C is incorrect. Nice. I would say, I don't know if it's 5% plus, but I see it not as the laggard.
I like the logic.
Yeah. Tyler?
Consumer cyclicals make sense. I would guess in an easing cycle, energy would be a laggard. I guess I'll go with B and with Keith.
All right. The true statement is A and C, and the lie is B.
So
good job.
Looks like Tyler and I nailed it.
Yeah, Lisa? They do lag. They're actually the worst performer.
Okay, can we cut this out?
out of every sector, they are the worst performer in general over that period of time, which is pretty surprising.
I mean, Tyler nailed it.
Yeah, we'll dig into it a little bit more, but. Hot button today. We've got Fed meeting, minimum of 25 bips of Fed cuts are priced in. I looked at Polymarket. Tyler, you had that, I think, last week, and it was at 80% expectation for a 25 bip point cut. And it's 96% on Polymarket today. And the 50 basis point, I think last week on the chart, it was like, I don't know, mid-teens, something like that. It's down to like 5%. So it's almost evaporated. So kind of interesting. So the key change since the last meeting was really the softening in the labor market, weak July and August employment reports. We talked about that at length over the last couple podcasts. You know, job growth appears to be much, much lower and below break-even rates. And unemployment, has risen for the last couple months. So supporting the labor market is something the Fed's been talking about more and more as a top priority. And, people are expecting that 25 bip point cut this week. So the key question is really, what the signal is. Is it going to be, you know, a series of consecutive cuts? Is it going to be just one and done? What's it going to look like? So I was looking through some of the Goldman and Morgan Stanley stuff over the last couple of days, putting this together, and I found the dispersion really pretty fascinating. So Goldman expects 3 consecutive cuts, 25 basis points, September, October, December, followed by 2 more cuts next year, getting to a kind of a steady neutral rate of 3% in 2028. So I think I'd like to open the discussion kind of with a little forecasting or a little guess. So the question that I'll pass around is the Fed cutting rates at this meeting? Does anyone want to take the devil's advocate of the 2% against the poly market or 4% against the poly market?
Tyler's shaking his head.
And
by the way, we're recording this pre-decision.
Right, so thank you. Knows. Yeah.
It'll come out after.
But. And if not, you know, what is the expectation around the table and by how much and what cadence?
Let's have Tyler start. He's like our resident interest rate kind of Fed thinks guru anyway.
So I think the question came up of the 50 of how aggressive does the Fed want to be. I don't think the Fed is with the way that they've framed their decision-making thus far. I don't think they could do another 50. So I think they're basically stuck into a 25. And I think the cadence goes 25, 25, 25 for September, October, December.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Bank of America was on Bloomberg. Brian Moynihan and his new co-president were on Bank of America. I think they're pricing in 2. But there was a big shift in from the July meeting to Jackson Hole in Powell's remarks on the labor market. Like there was a pretty dramatic shift. Like I think the softening and the revisions of the 278 for the prior 3 months, I think spooked the Fed quite a bit. And so I do think they are, and then you have the 911,000 job revisions from March 24 to March 25. You had 22,000 instead of 73,000. The unemployment rate's kind of in line with where the July SEP, Summary of Economic Projections, that the Fed puts out. It's kind of in line with the path that they're expecting. I think they're expecting 4.5% unemployment rate by end of year. So I don't think they're necessarily worried about the unemployment rate, but I think they're worried about the number of jobs being added and the softening, because over time that tends to lead to a weakening economy. If you have less jobs being added, less movement creates less wage growth, that kind of thing. So I'm sticking to the 25, 25, 25 for this year. And then we'll see how it goes next year. But I think you were on a similar path to what we did last year. Again, not the 50, but I think we do 3 cuts in the final 3 meetings. And then they pause to see. And then basically it's like, see how the first half of next year goes, unless if something dramatic comes up. But I think they pause at the end of this year, see how those 3 cuts work their way into the system. And then you do another resumption of rate cuts if they need to in the back half of next year.
Hmm. Interesting. What's the terminal rate in your mind then?
So I don't think the 2% inflation is going to be a thing anymore. I think it's probably going to be, we've seen how sticky it is. Like that 2.5 is probably a better place, maybe even 3%. So if you'd expect a 2.5 to 3% ongoing inflation rate instead of 2, I would say I would expect like a 3 to 3.5% terminal rate. Right now the SEP is at 3% for long term for the Fed. I don't think they move that, but again, they're stuck at the 2% inflation rate. So
yeah,
I think they're just going to stick with the 3%, but I would say 3 to 3.5% is your terminal rate.
Lisa. Yeah. Oh yeah. Keith, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Lisa.
I mean, to the first question, I think they will cut tomorrow. I mean, market is pricing it in, investors are pricing it in, and the Fed tries to avoid a negative surprise when the expectations are so high. To kind of avoid some instability. But overall, I think, I mean, like to Tyler's point, that the shift has changed from inflation and waiting for inflation to reaccelerate because of tariffs and saying, okay, Companies were good with inventories. That's why we haven't seen it yet, but then we will see it pick it up in fall and we have to wait. And the labor market was not a concern at all, basically, before all of the big revisions are coming up and before the unemployment rate kind of started really ticking up, not significantly, but a little bit by every month, it seems. So I think, I do not think, also to Tyler's point, that we will see 50 basis points. I don't see why, because we still have, while inflation might not be as much as a concern at the moment anymore, but it's still picked up again and it's still not nowhere near where we feel comfortable at, whether it's back at 2% or a little bit higher after that. But I think they're more like, okay, let's give it 25 and then do it the next couple of months and then let's see where we are doing, if we can stabilize the labor market and what inflation is actually doing, because that concern is not completely off the table, but it's a little bit less, I would say.
So a holding pattern like what Tyler just articulated.
I would say that's the much likeliest scenario. So no weird 50 basis points cuts. I would say they're very, careful.
And where do you think the target ends up?
Good question. I mean, could be 3.5. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
Keith?
Yeah, not a whole lot to add.
I can't wait for this.
What do you mean?
how many cuts are we having this year, Keith?
It's right. Going up.
Well, first I'll start with, I think you both said it well, and Lisa, I think the shift has gone from focus on inflation, the dual mandate, to employment. So I think they've definitely made that transition. That's pretty obvious. And what do they cut? I think they do 25 this time. I think then I'm more in the Bank of America camp of 25 hold.
Just can't get you out of that.
No.
Too.
So we'll see. Tyler's calling for 3. I'm calling for 2. We'll see where the year ends up. But it's a balancing act, because right now, again, we can quickly shift back to inflation if inflation starts to your point of all of a sudden maybe that was inventory stuff, and we start seeing the fall. Mm-hmm. We start Q3 earnings. Maybe all of a sudden you start seeing inflation peak up. Then it's like, maybe we don't want to cut anymore. So it's a fine line. It's a balancing act, like it's always been. And if you want to go terminal rate, I'd go, it's at 3. I mean, I feel like it's lower. Just time. I think it's, they like to keep I like to see them have a little dry powder. That's part of my thesis of, if things really fall apart somewhere, that they can do a 50. I don't think they anywhere near needing to do it. And that's kind of where the probability did change from 80% of 25, and it was almost 20% of 50. Now people like took a deep breath at, okay, maybe 25 is enough. And just the signaling of a rate cut resuming, which would be enough. Job market is soft, but it's not terrible. It's not like we're losing jobs, right? We're just not adding as many as we'd like. So it's definitely a balancing act. And I don't, no one knows. It's data dependent. That's what everybody forgets, that they, it's like, we're hawkish on inflation. Now it's like, jobs. And maybe by
change again,
October, November, it's going to be, we missed something.
Yeah. But I mean, the inflation thing, like theoretically, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but theoretically there should be a one-time bump in inflation. And then by this time next year, you're coming back down.
Yeah, that's one time, but it hasn't all jumped up as of when the tariffs have been rolling. Right. So I think that's a stretched out, it maybe is a one time, but that's stretched out. We haven't seen the full effect of tariffs.
And we do not even have like the final tariff rates for everything in every country. Mm-hmm. So there's still some things in the making where we do not know the effective tariff rates where we come down. Then we have like another layer.
We don't even know if they're legal.
I was just going to throw that point in there. What happens if then? And it's like, so then inflation in theory would go back down, right? I mean, everybody's worried about tariffs causing inflation, and it's, which again, that causes another whole, we could spend probably 2 podcasts.
Well,
on
disinflation,
that,
right? Deflation.
Well, do you think companies problem. Just say we'll eat the cost since we're not, they're no longer in place. We'll just eat this one-time cost and call it a day. Or do you think the inventory that they are now getting from these countries, they will pass that through for a short period and then just keep pricing stable?
Well, yeah, that'd be my guess, what a company would do, right? Mm-hmm. You raise your price and try to keep it the same.
Right.
Right. Because going back down, I mean,
who wants to do that as a company?
So, which do you think they would do? Do you think they would just eat the cost and not pass on anything?
No.
I mean, you already see that.
So either way, it's going to show up in inflation.
Yeah.
It already partially. Does.
Well, it's just a matter of how much it keeps climbing, yeah. though, right?
So you the other, see it feeds into inflation.
The other thing that's not directly attributable to is the shrinkflation, too, mm-hmm. right? Like the size of the packaging. Yeah. You're just, they're passing it through in just kind of a sneaky way.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Price stays the same, but you're getting a lot less stuff.
Right.
Kyle, where do you land on for the?
Yeah, I don't know. I, you know, just so the median dot, I took a look on the Bloomberg yesterday, and it says median dots show for the Fed right now, two cuts in 25 to 3.875, two cuts in 26 to 3.375, one cut in 27 to 3.125, no change in 28 and a steady neutral rate of 3. So I don't know. I think I'll bundle my comments in with the next question. And that would be, I think you will see consecutive three cuts, 25 bips a pop, September, October, December.
Tyler Camp.
I don't think you'll see a wait and see though. I think it gets a little squirrely in the beginning of next year. And this is where the question comes in, is what could derail your view?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of weird stuff going on out there. So you think about like Fed board personnel and the politicization of that. You've got interest rate, payments, rolling the debt over. I mean, that's like ticked and tied together. Recession possibility, like if it continues to get worse. I mean, if you look at the jobs data, the new jobs that have been added, despite the revisions, you know, it's mm-hmm. been not great. The new jobs that have been added have been not the highest quality in terms of what people traditionally think of as like a strong economy. They're more government oriented and less private sector.
But that's for a while.
Yeah. So that's probably why you've been seeing revisions mm-hmm. is because the data is just not great quality.
Well, I think the last jobs report wasn't private jobs added actually negative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think as you look into that, you say, okay, you know, there's other exogenous kind of influence or factors that might come to bear come quarter one, two next year. So I don't necessarily have a strong conviction in this at all, but just to play the kind of devil's advocate of where I feel like the market likes to screw as many people over as possible. Right. So
well said,
you know, so, you know, what would screw the most people over as possible? Opening with that statistic on Polymarket, 96% believe you've got a 25 basis point cut coming. And the dot plot, everyone's anchored to that. You look at the futures, you know, expectations of where the curve is, and you're like, okay, like people are kind of in this normalized camp, but there are other things that could come to bear. So I'm curious, what could derail your view on what you just laid out? And it might not even be something that I noted there, whether it be Trump or the debt or recession, or, you know, maybe it's something completely else. What pokes a hole in your current stance?
I mean, the unknowns, right? I mean, I think number one is if we truly do start to see labor market decline, right? So instead of adding jobs, even net of government and government related jobs, if we start to see negative mm-hmm. jobs reports on first Friday of the month, I think that's where it derails it. I think you could have, if you start to see spiking inflation again, I think the Fed has to do something different. I'm not really sure what derails it, just because if you know the mm-hmm. unknowns, then it's not an unknown, right? So, I think the only thing, in my view, the only thing that would materially change my outlook would be as if things get materially worse, right? So next year GDP is supposed to be better than this year now, I think, is the expectation. So if that starts to come down, right, and you start to see recession flashes, mm-hmm. Consumers, you brought up last week, the consumers that are making over $100,000 are now starting to find bargain deals at the Dollar Trees, Dollar Generals. Mm-hmm. So if they, instead of finding just quick, easy bargains, like that's where they truly start to shop. and you start to see the top 10% of income households be affected by the price increases of tariffs because they're doing 50% of the spending. So if you start to see them slowing down, like materially, I think that also derails it.
Yeah.
I would agree. I think the one, again, it's the unknown you're looking for. The one thing that I think that would change the whole story for me is, you know, just having two cuts and then kind of seeing where things are at is recession hasn't been talked about at all this year. You know, a year and a half ago was the talk of, you know, recession.
I've heard
recession,
people talking about it a little bit more.
Very little. But now it's like, I think that's probably when everybody's so, all recession's right around the corner. I think most of us here were saying, no, we don't see it. I would say now where no one's talking about it, I think that's the one, I don't see it yet. Yeah. That's one, I think that could be the surprise that all of a sudden the Fed, that's when you see the Fed having to cut 50, 75 basis points to, and then say, okay, so maybe the we go into recession, but then ultimately then all those cuts kind of market stabilizes and goes higher. So it's,
I mean, it's such an interesting concept right now because your lower income households, I'd go on a limb and say that they're near recession.
Probably already in.
Probably already in.
Right? Your high income earners are doing just fine and spending like crazy still. So it's a weird, right? Because again, last week you also, Kyle, brought up the default rates, or not default rates.
Yeah, delinquency rates.
Yeah, rates, right. The 90 days plus. You really are at like 2008 levels, but it's all geared towards the lower income threshold right now.
Yeah. And then the question is how much,
when does that snowball?
And then what percentage of the overall economy is driven by that cohort, right?
Very
small.
Little,
that's right? The issue, so, right? And it could be more people, but the ultimate is unfortunately is not.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I think it was just Lisa, David, and I maybe, but the Josh Brown, Compound and Friends, I can't remember which guest they had on. I think it was like Carson Group.
But no, advertising for different shows, huh, Tyler?
It's all right. We're not competing with them right now.
Yeah, he's right around the corner.
Yep, we'll get there. But they brought up an interesting stat where only, I think it was the, what did I say? The bottom 20% income threshold
15 bips
per tier was like 15 or 20 basis points of S&P earnings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's so like that's not surprising.
That's a meaningless impact, right? Mm. So like you, and it's
from stock perspective, from a not stock from people.
It's hard to like say that because like obviously you care about them and you don't want that to be the scenario. But from the stock market perspective, there's little meaning to that income cohort.
It's better when everybody's doing better, but that's the cohort. I mean, if you flip it on the other end, if that top 5% does terrible for whatever reason, that's certainly going to be more
impactful.
Yeah. You know?
Well,
Lisa, do you have any?
Yeah.
Any?
I mean, nothing that hasn't been said yet. Yeah. I just think that it's not necessarily need to be like an exotic event that happens that derails it. I think the wheels could come off very easily. I mean, worst case scenario
would be squeaky already. Is that what you're saying?
Squeaky already. Right. I mean, the worst case scenario would be if the labor market continues to be weak or getting weaker while inflation is reaccelerating. Mm-hmm. That's the worst case scenario because then what are they going to do? Right. So, I'm with Keith that what he said before, I would prefer like, you know, have them still dry powder and maybe cut less and stop and kind of, maybe do it slower, but still have some dry powder for something like that, which is still a very much possibility at the moment. So I think there's not needed much, I think.
Well, how high do you guys want the Fed funds rate for dry powder?
Personally, if you go long term, I mean, the 10-year treasury yield where it's at, I think is fine. Mm-hmm. It's everybody got so used to that decade of zero Fed funds rate and low, I don't think that's a healthy thing either. So.
That was not normal anyways,
but
right?
The historical spread between the Fed funds rate and the 10-year treasury is 120 basis points. 10-year treasury is at 4%. So if you use historical averages, again, those are averages. If you have a neutral rate of 3%, your 10-year treasury should be at 4.2.
So you think if the Fed starts cutting that the 10-year treasury yield is going...
We saw it last time.
I know. Is that what you're predicting right now, though?
It's a good segue.
I mean, my call has been wrong on that for this year, right? I've been able to trade it a little bit, but over the last 6 months, I've been wrong on it. But theoretically, yes, the 10-year treasury should be trading higher, right? Theoretically, when where we're at today, the 10-year treasury should be above 5%.
Okay.
If you're just using a normal yield curve, right? And we're not in a normal yield curve, but if you're saying over a long-term Fed funds rate, 3%, normalized environment, yield curve is normal, we should be at a 4.2% treasury.
They were going back lower on the Fed funds rate that no one's talking about. The other thing we haven't talked about before your segue is we're focusing on three negatives. It's like, what happens if the wheels get tighter and economy just hums along? Maybe that's the upside, bright side that we haven't, no one's dropped on us.
Right.
So anyway.
That's what I'm trying to get at. So like the Fed is right now under the assumption that yes, we're softening, but we can still have this soft landing. And if they can land the plane correctly, they would do the three cuts, not because the economy is weakening, but because they're trying to get back to a more neutral rate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They get the terminal is three, right? At some point they get there. I don't know if I think the 10-year in the shorter term goes lower below four. Personally, we'll see. Another Tyler and I side bet.
No, I mean, at this point on a technical basis, like where the 10-year treasury is headed, like technically on a chart, it is headed below four.
Okay. Host is ready to switch us.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
I'll pause.
It's probably fruitful to continue that and we could do a whole nother podcast on the implications for housing, pent up demand, because the Fed funds, counter to common belief, does not actually set the pricing for mortgages. You know, it's much more correlated with the 5 and 10 year. And so the Fed, to your point, the Fed already has cut, a bunch, 100 basis points over the last year. And despite that lower policy rate, mortgages have actually gone up 25 basis points on average. So we can talk about that a lot, but I'm going to actually kind of rewind a little bit and go, conclude on the Fed stuff. So a chart caught my eye yesterday, and I'm sure others as well. So S&P 500 returns after Fed interest rate cuts resume. So this chart's basically showing the GIC sectors, so healthcare, consumer staples, energy, utilities, et cetera, following a pause of 6 months or more. And it shows a breakdown of if you have what the median gain is, if you have two or fewer cuts from the Fed or four or more cuts. And it is a almost inverted chart. So if you have this view of we're only going to have one or two cuts in the next couple months after this pause we've had, what works is way different than if we have three, four, five, six cuts, like what the median dot plot is estimating. So to give you some color, for those watching and listening, it's basically if you've got two or fewer cuts, you're going to have real estate, infotech, industrials, financials leading the charge. They are going to be the winners in terms of sector bets. If you've got more than four or more cuts, it's going to be defensives and high-end cyclicals. So you're seeing healthcare on average, over each of those cases, over all the different business cycles, healthcare is up 20.3% if you have four or more cuts on average.
Well, it would be about a time for that sector.
Right. Consumer staples up 20%, energy up 18%, utilities up 14%, consumer services up 14%. If you're taking that weaker view where we're only going to see one or two cuts, you're going to see the like for like healthcare not up 20 in that four plus cut, it's going to be flat.
Yeah.
So it's a huge swing in financials going from the worst performer if you have several cuts to the one of the best. So the question is, what, if anything, have you thought about doing or done? We've already laid out the positioning for what we think our personal views are, running the portfolios, thinking about asset allocation, sectors, industries. What have you thought about doing or already done with respect to positioning? Are there new risks or opportunities you found yourself gravitating towards as cuts have been priced in? And while you guys are ruminating on that, I'll kick it off. So in the value world, healthcare has been something that's been very interesting because it's been beaten down. You know, you can just look at like Novo Nordisk or UNH or, I mean, you know, Thermo Fisher, the list goes on and on, right? There are some interesting cyclical, very interest rate exposed names that you can tell when people are excited about cuts because the market just works on those names and it's like, boom, you flick a light switch. And that would be home builders and anything infrastructure, you know, those cyclical related things. So circling back to where we opened with that two truths and a lie of over the full 12 months of easing cycles, cyclicals have averaged a whopping 19% return. It's very clear. You can see it in what's working in my portfolios at least. And so I've been, you know, leaning more into those. And I think the expectation of that 3 to 5 cuts based off the median dot plot is something that is definitely priced in, but there's also some edge case opportunities where stock specific moves have happened across the board, you know, that enter the hopper for me, where like, you know, you've got like a Gartner or you've got a Accenture or like these government businesses that are tech businesses that, yeah, dog meat, right? It's gross. But now is the time that might be an interest to just kind of dust off the fundamentals and take a look. And it might not be time now, but over the next, you know, quarter to 2 to 3, looking at fundamentals, looking at where rates go, those are things that could be really interesting. So curious, what are other people looking at?
Similar stuff. I mean, I you know, I'm in the less cuts than more cuts. So I guess I would favor those sectors, industries that you kind of mentioned, financials, industrials, tech. Right now I'm slightly underweight, but it's an area of, if you see some pullbacks and outside of those Meg 7, they're certainly of interest for me. And consumer discretionary, I think, has kind of been hit and miss. So I think those are opportunities. And so, yeah, I think it's, you know, like the show is Stock Picker's Market, and we're going to, you know, look for different ideas. But that's kind of the area I'm looking at. Now, if I think the economy is really going to slow down, then I think you flip it to the, well, you opened up the thing with healthcare, staples, energy, utilities. I think that's where the 2 cuts less, 4 cuts more is basically 4 cuts is really saying that economy is really slowing down. So you want to position yourself defensively. So I don't think that's why I'm on the other side of the barbell.
So this is 2 or fewer, 4 more. So I wonder where 3 lands, but,
boy.
So I guess I'm on both sides of this. I mean, healthcare is very interesting right now, just with how beaten up the valuation is. Fundamentals, some are good, some are bad, but I think if you can find the right higher quality company, that needle in the haystack, I think you're going to be rewarded. And then I also really like financials right now. So I'm kind of like barbelling this.
Yeah. So you're hoping like for two cuts or less.
I'm hoping for 3, right? So
he's in between.
So
he's
gonna take the good and bad. So I wonder what happens when you have 3, and does your healthcare still work well, and does financial still work well?
We're not even including what we remember we cut back last year. I mean, so yeah.
But this is following a pause of 6 months.
Yeah. Oh, this is following a pause. So then
I didn't see that clarification.
It's a resumption. Yes.
Right.
Cuts.
Right.
Yeah, I like healthcare and financials, so kind of taking that barbell approach.
No, I don't disagree with what you're doing. I think there's opportunities in all of them. It's, but as a whole, if you want to slant one way or the other, I think this is a good picture of where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Lisa?
Yeah, I think overall, what needs to be mentioned is, I mean, we saw like tech kind of leading the pack pretty much over the last couple of years, and we always kind of talked about maybe is now the time for broadening of the market and all of that. And what we kind of discussed here is a broadening of the market, right? So we talked about a lot of opportunities outside of the usual tech that is with us for the last couple of years, which is great. So interest rate cuts generally, no matter if it's 3, 4, whatever we talked about, is generally conducive for that this can finally happen and more companies and sectors can enter the stage. Rather than, okay, what would work in what exactly scenario? I don't know exactly how many cuts we will get. There are certainly some interesting areas like financials, which is interesting because if there are lower cuts, they outperform And if it's more cuts, they underperform. I mean, it's like when the Fed cuts interest rates right out the gate, their net interest margin gets compressed, but that might be a little bit more balanced with increased financing and all of that, which at some point with more cuts, you kind of alleviate that advantage. Healthcare, again, capital intensive. So that is very much positive if we have rate cuts. But overall, I think the whole picture kind of shows us, hey, there are sectors which get very much more interesting now that we see cuts at all.
Well said.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think with that, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Did we want to make a mention EAF, anything there?
Yeah, we're kicking off one of our big conference of the year. The conference of the year for us is a lead advisor forum. So that's, we have over 100 of our top advisors coming in for a couple day conference, and stay tuned. We'll give an update next week on how it went, but it's a fantastic outing. And I'm excited for it. All of you guys are excited for it as well. It's busy though. I mean, yeah. it's a lot of work next few days. So we'll see how we look next week.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, give us a like and subscribe. See you next time.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Elligard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments, ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor.